I'm Dr. Beverly Wright, Director of the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice at Dillard University.
And you lived through Katrina.
I guess you could say that I lived through it, and I'm living beyond it as well.
So here it is, 5 years on from Katrina. How are things here?
Well, if I had to grade the city, I would say we're about at a 5 on a scale from 1 to 10. But there's some areas of the city who are at a 9. So it really, how you're doing depends on who you are and where you live. And it's not necessarily connected to income. It is connected to skin color. And African Americans, who made up 80% of the people affected by Katrina, are not doing as well as white people who now make up 80% of the persons who have come back whole.
So, give me some more details on this. What was the black population of New Orleans before Katrina? What is it now? And what portion of black New Orleans has come back?
Well, before Katrina, I would say the city was about 72% black. Now, we're still making up a majority, a slim majority. We're over 51% black in the city now. But when you look at who those persons are, that's where we really get in trouble. There seems to just be a reluctance to help middle-class black people. The areas that were flooded were majority African-American neighborhoods, New Orleans East, where we sit now, where I live, which is made up of mostly working class, middle class, upper middle, and extremely wealthy African Americans. That area was completely devastated. You have the Lower Ninth Ward as well, that everybody knows what happened there, getting a lot of attention, and really to some extent getting more assistance in the middle class New Orleans East area. People rush in and help poor black people, and the poorer you are, the better it makes them feel. But if you're middle-class black people, they're very reluctant to help you because they figure you have enough. So New Orleans East suffers from that. On the face of it, it doesn't make any sense because we made up 60% of the tax base for this city when you include New Orleans East and the Lower Ninth Ward. So we were the largest contributors to this city. So why wouldn't people who wanted the city to come back not want New Orleans East to come back? Well, for us, it's really simple because we represented the political force for this city. One of the reasons that New Orleans remained black politically and under black control was because of New Orleans East and the Lower Ninth Ward that had high voter turnout. Then you add the 6th and 7th wards, which are not really gentility, they call it gentility now, with high voter turnout, then we were able to maintain all of the major positions in the city and keep it black, which I think we deserve since we were the majority. You know, we're in a society where majority rules. And so I think we make African Americans are probably the only group that when we get to be a majority, we still don't rule. And that's sort of what we're dealing with now.
What happened in this house?
Well, this house is very interesting. It had 6 to 8 feet of water in it, completely destroyed. There was an alligator in the pool in the back. The whole house had to be gutted.
It's beautiful now. I mean, I couldn't tell walking in here that anything ever happened.
Oh, you really can't. And that's the beauty of this whole thing. There's no reason for us not to be able to come back because it can be rebuilt. I mean, it was a matter of gutting it, mold remediating, and it's like you start over like a new house. And the people in New Orleans East had insurance, which meant that most of us could really come back. I mean, who would give us a mortgage and not allow us and not make certain we had insurance? New Orleans actually has some of the highest insurance coverage rates of any urban area. And you have to ask, why is that? Well, we had to get a mortgage. And with that mortgage, it meant we had to be covered. And of course, the banks were going to make certain that their property was absolutely covered. So there weren't a lot of people who did not come back aren't back because they had no jobs, first of all. So what else did they do in New Orleans East? That impacted middle-class black people. They fired all of the New Orleans public schools teachers. And you know, the backbone of the black middle class is the public school system with all of the teachers, you know. I'm certain if you look back, you probably have aunts and uncles who were school teachers. That was a safe position, and most of them had it. So if you fire all of the black school teachers, there's a ripple effect. You got the middle class. These are the people whose children go to college. They go to Dillard and Xavier and all of the local colleges. It also supports small and disadvantaged businesses, because a lot of the contracts that then come out of the public schools go to minority businesses. It also includes a custodian, so you deal with the working class, and the teacher's aide. So you got the school system, which is the largest employer of this city other than Tulane University. Then you can destroy the black middle class. If you destroy the black middle class, it means that black people do not get back on their feet. That was the first thing that they did. But they did something else even more devastating. They did not allow Methodist Hospital to come back. While they're fighting the bill, veterans, and charity, Methodist Hospital had limited damage as compared to those other hospitals because it was relatively new. It sits in New Orleans East. It was a home for thousands of African-American and other people of color doctors. It's where the majority of us went and felt safe. We was pretty certain they wouldn't just kill us because we knew a lot of the doctors who worked there. They were our neighbors. They were our friends. They went to our churches. And so this was a very, very stable neighborhood before the storm. By not allowing the hospital to come back, it means that most of the black doctors had to go elsewhere. And they did. They also, the majority of them, lived in New Orleans East. So you stop the hospital, you kill the school system, you successfully kill the black middle class. They are, when I say they, I'm talking about those people, and if the hat fits, you wear it. Only those people who didn't want us back. There is an elite power structure. It's supposed to be invisible. But in the South, it isn't. You know, our people are pretty blunt. And they're very forthright about with their racism. They really come out and tell you what they don't want. So doing that to New Orleans East made it very hard for black people to come back. Now you add to that the destruction of public housing. So now we're attacking poor black people when we had a lot of poor black people, but they were poor but hardworking black people. They worked in our restaurants, in our hospitals for less than minimum wage most times. Many of them had two jobs. But the one thing that helped them to stay afloat was public housing. All of the public housing was destroyed. It was on a path to destruction before the storm with Hope 6. That really, you know, the Hope 6 was put in during the Clinton administration and really meant to make it possible for people in public housing to buy housing and better housing. And of course it didn't work out like that because Bush. The Bush administration came into play and changed that whole equation, and public housing got to be mixed use housing, which ends up being maybe 25% of the new housing going to poor people and all the rest going at market rates. So you literally get rid of most of the poor people. So Katrina comes and they can fast forward with that project, and all public housing was destroyed. They say because it was irreparably damaged after the storm. Most of these housing projects didn't even have a brick missing. A lot of them didn't even have the roofs gone. So it was an excuse to get rid of public housing. Now, we've already attacked the middle class, right, with the teachers and then all the doctors in the hospital. Now you hit public housing, and you begin to see this smaller footprint that they talked about putting in place right after the storm very openly take place. Even though they no longer say it, you could see the handwriting on the wall. They plan to do it another way. So in New Orleans East, for example, we have one supermarket. I went to the supermarket yesterday. I could get no lettuce, you know, no fruit, all the fruit gone. My 7-grain bread, if I don't get there, you know, early in the morning, I won't get it. It was just amazing. 70,000 people, one supermarket in New Orleans East. That's it. Now, we've been here 5 years, the people are here. We must have eight Walgreens. They're on every corner. So what is it that Walgreens knew that the supermarkets don't know? Are we really very sick, you know? And so we can buy candy. In fact, they said the numbers of prescriptions went down, but what went up was candy in Walgreens. And so when people are depressed, they do a number of things. They eat candy. Chocolate, for one thing, goes up. In good times and bad times, the sale of chocolate goes up. So Walgreens saw its sale of candy go up, even though its prescriptions were going down, with people cutting their high blood pressure pills in half to make them last. We had all of that, those kind of things going on. A whole lot of retired people here because they could come back and they had nowhere else to go. They had insurance. They were retired. So they could get their houses fixed so they could get back into their homes. That was it.
So how would you explain what happened in New Orleans in environmental justice terms?
Well, this is clearly an environmental justice issue all across the board. I call it the perilous consequences of public policy. That's a book that will be coming out in another year or so. But it and public policy is not always written. The policy often is what the action is. And so you go back looking for the policy to support the action, and there is none. The action becomes a policy. And we are a product of that. A lot of what happened to us was not policy. It was action, and those actions became policy. So the environmental injustice occurs in a number of ways. The fact that, first of all, when you look at the federal level, how they never address the soil contamination that exists all over the city from the sediment that was left. And what is just amazing about this is that it was an easy fix. And the Army Corps of Engineers had, in the first few weeks after the storm, come up with a remedy. They were literally going to scrape, you know, dirt off the whole city. They said it would take 3 months for them to finish it. We were gone from here longer than 3 months. They were literally going to scrape up all of the topsoil all over the city. New Orleans would have been the cleanest urban area in the country. Politics set in because the Army Corps was ready to go, where some politicians decided that if they did that, they'd never get the city back. It would have a reputation for being a Superfund site or something. It was something really crazy. When, in fact, a lot of people have not come back, including the Neville, our famous Neville brothers. I'm getting his name now.
Aaron
Neville has not come back because of the contamination and the asthma that he has. It makes it very hard for him to breathe. And he lived in the East as well. And I knew other people who were not coming back because of their fear of the contamination. So, you know, one of the things that we did at our center, and we got a pretty good reputation, well, we had a good one before that, but since then, was to really show people how to do it for themselves. And my thing was, if you're not going to protect the citizens, at least tell them what they need to do to protect themselves. And so we started the Safe Way Back Home campaign, where people remediated their own properties and planted new grass and so on. And that has been going on across the city, and we have continued our program, also working at certain school grounds to protect children and some playgrounds.
So how far has the self-remediation program gone?
I would say not far enough. We've been concerned because New Orleans has a history of backyard gardening. So when I was a kid, everybody had a garden. If you didn't have one, you ended up with one because the vines would start to grow across the fences. So you'd end up with tomatoes and what we call melitón, which is a Japanese plum. You have okra just showing up in your yard. So I grew up with things growing in my yard that we ate. And so it's an old tradition, and it's been difficult for us to try to get the word out to people, do not eat the vegetables that are growing in your yard unless you've had your yard tested, or use raised gardens.
So what are the other environmental justice issues that come out of the Katrina experience?
Well, levee protection, for one, was one of the biggest ones, and we're still dealing with that. I mean, even after all the money that was put in place, wealthy and white got better protection than the rest of us. So the Laura Knight Ward got 1 foot of additional protection. Gentilly got a half foot, and New Orleans East got 0 additional protection. And the best example was the levee protection that what we call Lakeview was getting, which is just a few blocks away from where I live. You literally had to look up at them. They're like 12 feet high. I mean, they already started out ahead. So went to the Army Corps of Engineers meetings to find out, what is this process and how is this happening? And this is what we were told, that rich white folks were in the plan for better protection some 15, 20 years ago. And so their projects were already in the hopper. So when things get fast-tracked, what's in the hopper comes out first. So they ended up ahead of us again. So it was a lesson for us, you know, trying to understand, how does this work?
Let's talk about the oil disaster and the environmental justice aspects of that, even as far north from the Gulf as here in New Orleans.
You know, it was amazing to me because whenever they talk about fishermen, they don't show black fishermen. It's a huge group. And think about it now. If we were not allowed to go to school, we had to make a living some way. If it wasn't on a plantation, what would black people do to earn a living in Louisiana? They would become fishermen and oystermen and stuff. And they're 10,000 deep in some of the parishes, in Plaquemine Parish and so on, but they were invisible. I think that certain cultures that have made Louisiana distinct could disappear. When certain lifestyles disappear, then a certain part of that culture that has been maintained can also disappear. So we could lose our difference. But for those of us who live in Louisiana, oil is like our drug. It's killing us, but we can't let it go because our economy is so tied to it.
Science and development question for you. Climate change science points to rising sea levels. What does this mean for the future of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast?
Oh, I think that we're in trouble. And, you know, right now it is the Gulf Coast, but it's literally all of us, the whole globe. I don't know what it's going to take to get us to be able to pass the kind of legislation that's really needed. I think that the political climate is just so divisive. I feel like we're going to implode, you know, because we are unable to come together and solve some of our problems. My hope is for the future with young people. I do see a change in the attitude of the young. I would say that young people are not nearly as racist as what we used to be. And as we die out, there's less and less of that evilness we can pass on to children. So there is hope for the future, and the future is in young people. And I think they see a completely different world, and I'm so happy that that is the case.